Marty Moss Cohen, welcome to Radio Times. Do you really need that antibiotic prescription for your sinusitis or an EKG as part of an annual checkup or an MRI scan for your headache or aching back? Those are the kinds of questions the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation wants patients and doctors to ask. The board, working with 9 physician organizations, has compiled a list of tests and procedures that are overused and often unnecessary. It's challenging the belief that more care is better care and has teamed up with Consumer Reports to spread the word through a campaign called Choosing Wisely. And it's our topic for today's Radio Times. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Dr. Christine Cassell. She's president and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation. She's a geriatrician. And Chris Cassell, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
And I should say it's Castle, not Cassell.
Castle,
yes, indeed. And on the telephone is Dr. Gilbert Welch, professor of medicine at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice, author of a book called Overdiagnosed, Making People Sick in Pursuit of Health. And Gil Welch, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you,
Marty. Chris, let me begin with you. How much healthcare dollars do you think is spent on literally on unnecessary care? Do we know the answer to that question?
I don't have a dollar figure, Marty, but actually it's the researchers from Dartmouth, where Dr. Welch is, who have put forward this figure that up to 30% of what we spend on healthcare is waste. Now, there's lots of different ways of defining waste, but within that are the use of unnecessary or redundant kinds of tests and treatments that actually don't contribute either.
Well, I'll pick up on that, but Gil, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that.
Yeah, on how much waste there is?
Yes.
That's actually not my estimate, but I can't disagree with it at all. It's always hard to make an estimate of waste and harm in medicine, and it becomes a real accounting problem. But roughly speaking, I'd say a third's a good number to think about.
Now, this report from the foundation came up with about 45 tests and procedures from a variety of different disciplines that members of those disciplines thought were overused.
That's right, and I give these medical leaders a lot of credit. In each of these specialty areas, they actually went to their scientific committees to look at all of the latest research and decide what they thought were the 5 top things. They all said there's more, but we asked them for the 5 top things on a list of things that are susceptible to overuse and often unnecessary.
And I'll get to some of those specifics, but broadly speaking, is there an explanation for this overuse of certain tests and procedures?
There's a lot of reasons why this happens, Marty, and Gil in his book has addressed a number of them. One of them that is often the first thing on the list is the fee-for-service payment system, which is not everywhere, but is the predominant way that we pay doctors in our healthcare system. And that means that doctors aren't paid for outcomes or responsible for populations of patients. They're just paid for every visit, every procedure, every test, et cetera. So there's kind of a business model that's built into that. And then you add to that that patients often feel like more is better, and a doctor wants to say, well, actually, you don't need that chest x-ray or you don't need that head CT. And the patient says, well, I think I do. The doctor doesn't want to say no. That's a very uncomfortable conversation, and you often don't have the time for it. And so that, I think, has led as well to a lot of overuse. And then a third thing is that new research is happening all the time that tells us that things that we have used routinely are really no longer necessary. So the annual chest x-ray that you used to get with your annual physical, well, there's some question about whether the annual physical is even that useful, but certainly we know that the annual chest x-ray is not. If the person, and again, this has to be individualized, if the person doesn't have symptoms or something that would lead you to want to check on the lungs.
And Gil Welch, how much do you think of the driver of some of these costs are fear of lawsuits, the kind of defensive medicine that a lot of physicians talk about?
Well, As Christine already highlighted, there's sort of a myriad of factors, a complex web acting here. Certainly, lawyers are part of the story. Money's part of the story. True belief of the value of testing. And we should say, you know, of these 45 things, by my count, about 3/4 of them involve testing not to
That's
do.
That's right.
And Marty, I want to just stop for a second and just be clear to your listeners, you know, what a breath of fresh air this list is. I mean, for years, medical organizations have been developing recommendations and guidelines focused on things doctors should do. Seeing a list of things we should not do, that's really different. And I think your audience should appreciate how refreshing this is to come from the medical specialty societies.
Well, let me quote some of those. And I have to say, in this list, I don't understand what they are because they're pretty complicated and sophisticated. But coming from the American Academy of Family Physicians, don't do imaging for low back pain within the first 6 weeks unless red flags are present. Don't routinely prescribe antibiotics for acute mild to moderate sinusitis unless symptoms last for 7 days or more. This is very basic stuff, Christine.
That's very basic stuff. And stuff that has been proven by research, but that often patients may say, well, my neighbor got this, why can't I have it? And so that's an important part of the communication. Marty, I wanted to address your point about a number of these 45 things being very technical and very specific to certain kinds of patients with cancer or patients with kidney failure. That's why the partnership with the consumer groups is so important. Consumer Reports, plus a long list of other consumer organizations, including AARP and Wikipedia, who they have brought together, who will translate this information into language that's understandable by consumers and by the public more broadly, so that when the patient and doctor have this conversation, they're both dealing with the same information.
Well, let me go back to you, Gil Welch, because it seems as consumers, as health consumers, we get buffeted back and forth between tests that come out. You know, they say this causes cancer, that causes cancer, or you should do this or you should do that. And I'm looking again at the American Academy of Family Physicians. Don't use dual energy X-ray absorptometry, DEXA screening for osteoporosis in women younger than the age of 65. Now, I remember not so long ago, they said if you're over 50, you should get a DEXA scan screening. And now we're getting this report saying don't do that. And as a consumer, I think it's hard to know what to do under our system.
I it's certainly understandable with you know, things changing, changing news reports and so forth. I think it's good to understand sort of broad principles here, and I want to speak about testing since that's the bulk of what is being dealt with in this list. And I think there's just become a broader understanding that tests aren't a free lunch. That, you know, that everyone says, of course we want tests because you can't be hurt by tests. And I think there's a broader understanding that, particularly in low risk populations, and screening tests have a way of having very little signal and a lot of noise. And that noise can lead to a whole cascade of events that may not be in patients' interests. And I think it's that growing understanding that there are downsides to looking hard at individuals that you're seeing in a lot of these recommendations.
Well, just picking up and having interviewed you on your book, Overdiagnose, that if you get a diagnosis, does that mean you're going to get a treatment, or how much are false positives?
Well, it's pretty closely linked to it. I won't say it means you always get a treatment, but once you start this cascade, it becomes very actually hard to stop things. And I think this is one reason, for example, the annual chest X-ray. People say, whoa, why are you doing that? And people that don't have symptoms, it's just going to raise all sorts of issues that may actually create problems for patients. So I think it's that recognition that there's no such thing as a simple test. I mean, testing has implications. I want to be clear that, you know, our diagnostic tests for patients who are acutely ill, you know, they're great things.
Right.
It's all about being careful about where they're likely to help people more than lead them down a bad path.
Well, Christine, is this tell us that don't go to the doctor or even don't get a test or procedure unless you feel sick?
No, not exactly. There is a role for preventive medicine. And so things like having your blood pressure checked periodically, particularly if you haven't ever had a blood pressure check, et cetera. Certain other kinds of tests that are proven to be effective in a screening sense. Another example is colonoscopy. Now, the American Gastroenterologic Society says if you have a clean colonoscopy, you only need it every 10 years, even though many people prescribe it for every 5 years. Now, here's the one I think Gil would agree where we don't have a lot of consumers rushing in wanting extra
right.
colonoscopies.
Yes.
But, so it's probably a good example. But people do need to think about health maintenance and prevention, but what we're learning is that a whole battery of tests is not the best strategy for prevention. Certain evidence-based tests are combined with a health assessment, a history, and a physical exam that a doctor does.
Well, Gil, I know that you've written a bit about prostate screening. Do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think the thing I would add to Christine's comment is that we need to be very clear what we mean by the word prevention, and probably should separate into two very distinct categories. The testing category of early prevention, prevention is all about early diagnosis. It's about looking for things to be wrong. That's where Christine and I may be a little bit different on the spectrum as to how positive we are of the value of that in various settings. But we both agree on this other part of prevention, health promotion, which is really critical, and it's the kind of things your grandmother would have told you, you know, don't smoke, eat your fruits and vegetables, go play outside. You know, it's about exercise.
Mercy,
it's about, you know, very positive things for the population that we all can agree are really important.
But that's that I think it's, and I'll go back to you, Gil, I'm about a minute before our first break here, but that does require, I think, a different kind of mindset for patients and maybe even for physicians.
Yes, it does. I mean, I think we have to be careful not to think that medical care is the only determinant of health. You know, it's a relatively small determinant of health, and that some of the determinants of health are things that people can do for themselves.
And I guess thinking about health in a different kind of way, Christine.
Yeah.
Yeah, thinking about health as something that the patient takes some responsibility for, takes ownership of, and then is a partner with the physician in that process. And that's why empowering the patient with more information, I think, is a good thing, more good and correct information.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Dr. Christine Castle here in our Philadelphia studio. She's the president and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation, just released an initiative called Choosing Wisely. And they got 9 physician specialty groups to come together and come up with a list of tests and procedures that they think are unnecessary and overused. Also with us is Dr. Gilbert Welch. He's a professor of medicine at the Dartmouth Institute of Health Policy and Clinical Practice, author of a book called Overdiagnosed. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Peggy and Steve Morgan of Marlton support WHYY and encourage listeners to visit the Philadelphia Zoo's newest interactive exhibit, Trail of the Lorax, based on the Dr. Seuss book, now through October 31st. Tickets at philadelphiazoo.org.
The Philadelphia Shakespeare Theater supports WHYY. This spring, it's The Joyous Confusion of Illyria with Twelfth Night, directed by Carmen Kahn. Joining Twelfth Night in repertory is director Aaron Cromie's murderous and bloody Titus Andronicus, styled after the 19th century Grand Guignol. Performances run through May 20th. Tickets to Twelfth Night and Titus Andronicus available at 215-496-8001 or online at phillyshakespeare.org.
WHYY-FM. You listen, you enjoy. You know you're probably going to make a donation. So why not just do it right now? And if you do, you can enjoy YStream, our regular WHYY-FM programming delivered online without membership breaks. Sign up for YStream by April 22nd. For more information and to make your donation now, visit whyy.org/YStream.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with Continuously Controlled Damping, or CCD. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. The American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation has teamed up with Consumer Reports, and they have launched their Choosing Wisely initiative, a list of 45 screenings and procedures that they and doctor groups say are unnecessary. We are talking about all of this with Christine Castle, CEO and President of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation, and with internist Gilbert Welch with the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice, author of a book called Overdiagnosed. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Chris, I know you want doctors and patients to have this conversation. I mean, that's part of what this initiative is about.
That's right. It's all about the conversation. This is not one size fits all. We're not saying for any of these 45 things that they should never be done. What we're saying is that there needs to be individualized decision-making, and that needs to be a conversation between the doctor and the patient. Those conversations are difficult sometimes, in part because in our more is better culture, doctors are reluctant to say no if a patient thinks they need something and they come in with some information from the internet or a neighbor and ask for it. And so I think that leads to some needs for better communication training on the part of doctors, but also more time for that conversation. But the other reason we need more time is that there needs to be a trust between the doctor and the patient. So, for example, with some of these things, when you first get back pain or when you first have a sinus and pain or a bad cough after you've had a cold or your child has a fever, instead of saying, well, I want to get every test in the book to make sure I don't have something serious, if you have a trusting relationship with your doctor, you'll stay in touch with that doctor. And if something comes up or a question arises, you'll have access to information at night or on the weekend. So you're not thinking I'm missing something somehow. That's really probably the most important part of this message.
Gil, is it hard for doctors to say no?
Yeah, I think it is hard. And as Christine highlighted, it takes time. And one of the things, you know, the path of least resistance, it's a lot easier for me to check a box and order a test than it is to talk about why it might not make sense. So it really takes time to explain, why a test might not be in a patient's interest. And so it's useful to have some backing from the specialty organizations. I mean, again, I want to emphasize, for years, you know, the specialty organizations have sort of focused on, you know, what we should be doing, and they've been looking after their members' self-interest. And this is a real change. This is an acknowledgement that there's a problem of overuse, and they're owning up to it. And I see that as a very good thing.
Go ahead,
and
Chris.
Gil, you would be interested to know that we've been monitoring all of the emails and the blogs and the tweets and, you know, everything we can look at in response to this. 95% of what we hear from doctors has been positive.
I'm sure it is. It's sort of breath of fresh
breath
air.
Breath of fresh air, right.
Right.
Is there a concern, I'll put this first to you, Chris, that someone might look at this report and say, you know, and we do have a very expensive healthcare system, is that this is sort of a backdoor to healthcare rationing?
Well, this is exactly not rationing, because rationing is withholding things that a patient needs. This is about not doing things that a patient doesn't need and making more individualized decisions. So I think that's one of the reasons why this has gotten such a good response, both from the public and from the profession, is that it gets us out of that rationing discussion.
You want to weigh in on that, Gil?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is about making the profession more sane. This is about making it better. There's just no question we've got overuse in this country, and it's working to patients' detriment in some case. So this is about making the system better.
But are you saying that overuse has actually led to an unhealthier population?
Absolutely. I think we have overutilized medicine, not certainly in every population, and there's certainly some subpopulations that don't have enough access to health care. But in general, our problem has been a problem of doing too much, not too little.
But and I think that part of the temptation, Gil Welch, is that if you have the technology, you know, if you have that big fancy machine that you just invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in, you're going to want to use it.
Absolutely. In fact, the financial calculation requires that you use it. And so you're right. Once you build it, they will come, and people will need to use it. And that's one thing. So this is only the first step, right? I mean, it's an important part to have the specialty societies begin to acknowledge the problem of overuse. No one should think that this is the end of the story and everything is finished now, because there are a lot of counterbalancing influences to deal with, and we've talked about some of them, the legal incentives, the financial rewards, performance measures, and so forth, with things that we're going to still have to contend with.
And Chris Kessel, have you gotten the trial lawyers on board on this initiative?
Not explicitly, but I think a number of people have pointed out that you're less likely to get sued if you have a trusting relationship with the patient. And so,
even with a difficult diagnosis.
Even with a difficult diagnosis, and even in very difficult situations, even if errors are made, that's the case. And so to the degree that this can lead to better conversations and more trust between the doctors and the patients, I think it will help that situation.
And again, Gil, anything you want to add to that? Because I do want to get to our callers.
Well, the only thing I'll say is most of what we're talking about here at TEFS are not about difficult diagnoses.
Right.
This is not about real sick patients, what to do. These are all generally about low-risk patients, whether we're searching for something extra to be wrong with them. So I want to be very clear about the distinction. You know, there's no excuse for sloppy diagnosis in people who are acutely ill. I mean, that's not what this list is about. It's about not raising issues in patients who are at low risk.
But Gil, you've also talked about the problem of false positives.
Absolutely.
when it comes to testing.
That's right. That's why we have to be careful. I mean, not just false positives, but the problem of overdiagnosis, which is never the patient is told they have a diagnosis that will ultimately never bother them. That's a slightly different problem, and that's a problem that is maybe a topic for a little bit of a different conversation.
But interesting nonetheless. And again, that's Dr. Gilbert Welch, professor of medicine at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice, author of a book called Overdiagnosed, Making People Sick in Pursuit of Health. And we asked him to join us on Radio Times today, along with Dr. Christine Castle. She's a geriatrician, president and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation. And they have just released an initiative called Choosing Wisely. In fact, you can go to their website, choosingwisely.org, to get more information about this initiative. You can also call us at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And it's about unnecessary tests and screenings and why they may not be as necessary as you think. Let me get, looks like Carl from Coatesville to join our conversation. And Carl, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, hello. Yes, I just wanted to kind of offer a cautionary counterpoint, I guess, to this. I'm 43 years old. I am recovering from a series of strokes that I had in October.
Oh, dear.
I had the first stroke, which went undiagnosed. I did go to the ER. They did a CAT scan. I wasn't bleeding out, so it wasn't an aneurysm. But the symptoms persisted, and it's my understanding now that had they suggested an MRI, like 24 to 36 hours after the initial onset of symptoms, that they probably would have caught the stroke that went undiagnosed, and 10 days later I ended up having a second and third stroke, which has had me out of work for 6 months. And I was just thinking, you know, the costs associated with that probably greatly outweigh, you know, any cost savings of not just doing that simple MRI. And I'm just, you know, curious about your opinion on things like that. And also, I was just wondering, from a litigious standpoint, you know, I would imagine that this list of, you know, these are things that you probably shouldn't do. What are your concerns about that list then becoming a shield that doctors could hide behind, saying, oh, well, it's not our fault it was on this list?
Oh, well, Carl, I appreciate your call. I'm sorry, obviously, that you had to go through that. But let me give Chris Castle a chance to respond.
Well, also, Carl, I think what you described is a very unusual and very serious situation. And you did the right thing going to the emergency room and seeking care for what was a symptom. You didn't say what it was that the symptom that brought you there. But that's very different than the kind of uncomplicated conditions that this series of recommendations is saying should not have MRI scans. For example, uncomplicated low back pain with no other symptoms neurologically, or a headache that doesn't have any of the red flags or danger symptoms. So I think it's exactly what Gil was saying. In your situation, you had an acute illness and it needed to be appropriately evaluated and treated.
Gil, do you want to add to that?
No, I don't think I have anything. That's well said.
Okay. And Carl, thanks for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Chris, I was talking to you about this before he went on the air, having been with two parents who died. And the difficult, and even parents who said, well, I don't want, you know, extraordinary measures, how difficult it is when you're in a hospital and you have to figure out, you know, what is extraordinary, what isn't extraordinary, how do I make those decisions that protect my parents' health, but it's not a kind of overuse of the system?
Well, and that's a huge and important question, Marty, that, you know, your parents were fortunate that you were there for them, and I think many of us have gone through those situations. And you're right, it is tough. So what we hope is that patients have had conversations with their parents about what their wishes are in the case of an advanced and ultimately untreatable illness, and then have the courage and information at their fingertips to ask the doctor, if you recommend this test, what are you going to do with the information you get from it? And how is this going to help my mom? And what are the implications there? Because that's the kind of thing that I think Gil describes as the cascade, where you're chasing a test result rather than saying, how can I make the person more comfortable and have their quality of life be as good as it can be for the time they have left?
Go ahead, Gil.
Yeah, you knew I wanted to say something.
I did. I heard that. I heard that in your voice. Go ahead.
You sort of talk about the end of life, and most of these actually do not deal with the end of life, but one does from the American Society of Nephrology. Don't perform routine cancer screening for dialysis patients with limited life expectancies. Well, that's like kind of common sense. And yet we have examples all through the data of people being screened for cancers when they already have a metastatic cancer. Now that's crazy, right? These are people at the end of life, and we're looking for another cancer diagnosis. So some of this is about bringing sanity back, right? That some of it is about, like, not doing a pap smear in a woman that doesn't have a cervix.
Which would mean she has had a hysterectomy.
She's had a hysterectomy.
Right. Right. And how common is that?
I mean, it happens. it's something that's been documented as being an ongoing problem, and that's why it's another recommendation. So some of this is about, you know, just common sense.
Chris, you were telling me again before the show started that you were talking to someone, a young person, a young healthy person, and for their annual checkup, every year they got an EKG.
That's right. And this was actually a radio interview that I did with an individual in New York who was very interested in this and said, well, this is very interesting because every time I go to my doctor, he gives me an EKG. And so two things to notice about that. One is that he's healthy, he has no cardiac symptoms, and this has just become sort of a routine ritual almost of going to the doctor. And secondly, his idea of you gave me an EKG, almost like it's a treatment instead of it's a test.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that's where sometimes consumers think that somehow that's part of the healing is to have all these tests. And so that's an important part of, you know, more education about the fact that these are not part of your healing and sometimes can lead to lots of problems.
Well, and again, just to underscore that the American Academy of Family Physicians don't order annual EKGs or any other cardiac screening for low-risk patients without symptoms.
Right, right.
Let me get to, looks like Brenda from Mount Airy to join our conversation. And Brenda, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
My concern is that if we remove some of these diagnostic tools from, you know, routine care for certain patients, they could be moved into a category of electives, and that in the end, you know, patients who are not really consumers in the system anyway will end up paying more for less and have to really, really negotiate with doctors for services. I realize that this is kind of a sober and smart initiative, but what about the other end of it?
It's a good question. Now, Gil, you want to take that?
I'm not sure I understood the question. Could I hear?
You want to do it again, Brenda?
Well, I just think it weakens some of the buying power of patients. Oh. I mean, we're already kind of at the, you know, weakened by the system. We don't have, I don't know, I'm not sure that I really can phrase it better. I'm sorry.
Well, actually, but, I think Chris can take it, yes.
So, Brenda, let me try kind of a different angle on what you've just said. I've talked with two people on a radio interview earlier this week who were both young adults, one a man is 30 and the other a mother of four children, both of whom have high deductible insurance plans. And they told stories of this therapeutic cascade that Gil talks about, where they had a routine test as some kind of, you know, simple abnormality was found that was just a normal variation, but all kinds of additional tests were ordered, and the person was left with the bill out of pocket for multiple thousands of dollars.
Oh, wow.
And so actually the buying power of those consumers is considerably diminished by all this unnecessary testing. So the other point, though, I think what you might be concerned about is whether insurance companies are going to start saying, well, we won't pay for this.
Exactly.
And actually, that's why it's so important for people to understand that none of these tests are things where we're saying they should never be used. We're saying this has to be an individualized decision, which makes it, I think, much more difficult for an insurance company to exclude things automatically. I think you really want that individualized decision-making.
And about another minute before our second break here, Gil, if I can just go back to you, and I, we raised this before, but I keep coming back to it. But I think there's a belief system. I certainly have this one, which is an early diagnosis is a good thing.
Yeah.
And that if I can get that test, then I can, you know, figure out that something may or may not be wrong, may or may not be right or wrong, and that an early diagnosis then gives me the kind of tools and information so that I can be an informed consumer.
Right. And the not so obvious downside is that early diagnosis may be an unnecessary diagnosis. That we all harbor abnormalities, and increasingly our diagnostic tests can find them, whether they're biochemical, genetic, structural. And we have to recognize, because we all harbor abnormalities, mm-hmm. that undergoing diagnostic testing without a clear symptom may produce more noise than signal. But once abnormalities are found, physicians feel bound to pursue them. That brings up the expense issue. It also tends to involve more invasive procedures, and some lead to diagnoses and treatments for patients that would otherwise never need them.
Well, let's take that short break, and we'll get back to our conversation with Dr. Gilbert Welch and Dr. Christine Castle. We are talking about the overuse of procedures and tests, and that's the conclusion of a new initiative called Choosing Wisely, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Delaware Rep supports WHYY and presents Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, The Skin of Our Teeth, April 19th through May 5th. Called a marriage of Plato and Groucho Marx, the Antrimus family faces one disaster after another, from woolly mammoths to Atlantic City showgirls and end-of-the-world warfare, only to endure and thrive in this timeless tale of human inspiration and survival. For tickets, 302-831-2204 or rep.udel.edu.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Bo Chi Lai was a rising star in China's Communist Party until a British businessman was found dead in a Chinese hotel room, and authorities say Bo's wife may be behind it. Also, the story of the wrecking crew sought after session men in the L.A. music scene. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase Cancer Center and Fox Chase Cancer Center Buckingham have been awarded three-year terms of accreditation in radiation oncology by the American College of Radiology and the American Society for Radiation Oncology. This accreditation represents Fox Chase's commitment to the high level of quality, patient safety, and technical rigor as specified by national experts in the field. More at foxchase.org and foxchase.org/Buckingham. Fox Chase Cancer Center, hearts plus minds.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen again, talking about an initiative called Choosing Wisely, launched by the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation and Consumer Reports, telling doctors and patients about 45 commonly prescribed but often unnecessary tests and screenings. We're talking with Dr. Christine Castle, President and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation, and with Dr. Gilbert Welch, a professor of medicine at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice, wrote a book called Overdiagnosed, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And again, if you want some more information about this campaign, you can go to choosingwisely.org. Christine, you were telling me a bit about, I guess, the difference between the CT scan and the MRI, just for our listeners, so you can share that information with them.
Sure. As we talk about the risks to patients of overtesting, we've been focusing today on the therapeutic cascade or the diagnostic cascade and the way that an abnormal finding leads to all kinds of additional unnecessary and sometimes invasive procedures. But there's also a direct risk to patient in overtesting if it involves radiation exposure. And that is particularly true of CT scans, which have a very high radiation exposure, and of course multiple x-rays of any sort, some of the cardiac nuclear imaging stress tests. So consumers should be aware of that aspect as well, that that there can actually be risk of multiple imaging tests with radiation exposure.
Gil, you want to add to that?
Well, I want to be clear, when I walk out of this hotel to go back to the conference, that I get hit by a car, I'm jumping in a CT scan at George Washington.
Right,
so I
of
want
course.
Everyone to know right. that these tests are really useful for an acutely injured or sick patient. But absolutely, this is the question of whether you want to do routine, repetitive testing.
Yes,
involving radiation. That's a very different issue, and that's a concern. And another concern, as we've talked about, is the cascade of events that may follow. And just to come back to, I think, Brenda's point is, you know, does this somehow take something away from the consumer they're paying for? This is about taking money out of the system that doesn't produce benefit. This is a way to help protect patients from some of the bankruptcies that occur as people incur more and more charges that aren't covered by insurance. And it's about trying to control the cost of insurance so people can see some of that money in their paycheck instead of being withheld for their insurance policy. So there's a lot here.
And Gil, it seems that we pay more out of pocket now for our care.
Absolutely.
Let me see what Joyce from Fox Chase has to say. And Joyce, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. I work in a multimodality medical facility, and what I see a lot of the time are the physicians, they're ordering testing for, say, MRI, say for a lumbar MRI. Now, the patient hasn't had any previous spine surgery. They don't have a mass. They don't have MS. They just want the gadolinium contrast because of low back pain, when that's not really indicated. So then we have to call the doctor's office, try to explain to them, and of course I'm a receptionist, so they're not too happy with me telling them what needs to be done. So if they could be better educated as to when what study needs to be ordered that needs the contrast. And another problem is they try to order sinus MRIs on patients when actually CAT scan is a better modality to see the sinuses. So that's what my comment is.
Well, Joyce, you got a thumbs up from Chris Castle here for your call. Let me give her a chance to weigh in on that.
Well, just that it's good to have everyone in the healthcare team, and Joyce, your role is as important as anyone else's, to interact with patients as well as to give physicians feedback about the specifics of this so that we can reassure a patient that if a test is needed, is ordered, that it's really needed. Because what we hope happens with this campaign is more and more patients will begin to say, do I really need that test when this happens?
I know from physicians that I know is that they often feel that they end up fighting with insurance companies and probably people like Joyce to get what they think their patients need.
Well, actually, I want to respond to sort of kind of the general notion that I think a lot of us have as physicians, because we think the world expects this of us, is that the close of the visit has to end with some action, some definitive action, like ordering a test or ordering a drug. And I think we're in the process now of trying to recognize that some of the what is really good medical care is when people get good advice and don't have the knee-jerk reaction that every time something, every time you're faced with a patient, doesn't need to end in a test or a treatment.
Well, and even just picking up on that, from the patient's perspective, which is that you're going to feel lousy for a couple of days, and then you'll start to feel better.
Right.
And sometimes patients don't want to hear that. They want to feel better right now.
And you know what? The MRI isn't going to make them feel better right now. Right?
Just to underscore that. Joyce, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what looks like Michael from Radnor has to say. Michael, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi,
thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
For several years, I was a senior level executive in the Blue Cross Blue Shield organization. And in the 1990s, there was a presidential panel looking at healthcare costs in the United States. And a major presentation and a major chair of that organization, of that task force, was Senator Bill Bradison of Ohio. And I was privileged to attend one of his presentations. And one of the things he said was, it's very interesting, but here in the United States, many people do feel that death is optional. And we will definitely want the best health care that other people's money can buy. So I think it's not only the physicians. I also think we as consumers, we want these medical miracles. We're not feeling too good today, so please order an MRI because I have a headache. Or I'm feeling a little down. Doctor, I really want the entire panel of blood work done to see what my chemistry is. We actually love in this country to have the ability to snap our fingers and think that science can do everything. So it's not just the physicians and overdiagnosis and overtesting. We as consumers really have to look at the limitations of medicine and also consider the cost structure of the medical industry.
Fair enough. Michael, let me give Christine Castle a chance to weigh in.
Well, thank you. I think that there's shared responsibility here, I would say, and that's what you point out. First of all, Senator Gradison was really an important leader in this area, and I give him a lot of credit for that. And we need to have a continued sort of sophistication, I think, in our policymakers about this area to get away from this rationing and fear-mongering and get to a really sensible and data-driven discussion that really is in the public's best interest. But, you know, what you point out is exactly why I'm so excited about the consumer partners we have in this campaign, that it's an important and wonderful step for the societies to be stepping out with these lists, but it's equally important that the information get translated and disseminated effectively to consumers who have these questions and really don't understand all of the epidemiological data and information that they need to know when they become empowered consumers.
And in September, there'll be some more specialty groups with some more lists, I guess.
We have about a dozen additional societies who are already at work on their lists that will be released in the fall, and even more who we've begun additional conversations with.
And Gil, I feel like I keep going back to the same thing, but Michael's call just reminded me of this, which is this sense of, and maybe it's a cultural thing, I mean, that our healthcare system represents a kind of cultural perspective about what we expect from science, what we expect from doctors, how we expect to live our lives.
Well, whenever I hear about patient demands, and I know they're out there, I just want to come back, you know, where did that come from? And I think in many ways we, the medical profession, the medical industry, are in large part responsible for them, because we've sort of systematically exaggerated some of the things we can do. And, you know, the advent of advertising, all the sort of health in the news media, I think has sort of systematically exaggerated the role of medical care in health. And I'm a conventionally trained, you know, Western physician. You know, when you're sick, I think there's a lot to say for going to your doctor, but there's so many other determinants of health. And I think we've made people believe that physicians have more power than we do, or more abilities than in fact we do.
Do you agree with that, Chris?
I do agree with that, and that there's a lot of ways in which the physician needs to be part of conveying that message more effectively to patients and to communities, where a lot of things that relate to people's health can really be put in the patients and the families and the community's own hands.
Let me get, looks like Janine from Jenkintown to join our conversation. Janine, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, yes.
Hi.
I'm just calling. My daughter has been seen at Children's Hospital for the last couple of years, and she's stable now. But the bottom line is she's been approached, and I have as her mother, for many tests, which include added exposure, and unnecessary, in my opinion, to CT scans to be part of these studies. And I was wondering, you know, what your thoughts were on that.
Are you saying, Janine, this is part of a research project or part of her care?
No, not part of her care. They have, you know, between the University of Pennsylvania and Children's Hospital, they individually and in many coordinated efforts have many research studies going on. And once you're in that system, you're constantly approached about participating in all kinds of various research studies, many of which require your child to be exposed to CT scans. And in one of them, a DEXA scan. And I declined that. I declined all the studies that required her to be exposed to CT scans. But it's a huge thing at these big research hospitals. And I'm always shocked that they're approaching and having so many children, being willing to put so many children under additional radiation exposure in the name of quote-unquote research. And these kids are already getting scans and tests anyhow for a myriad of diseases.
Well, you raise
And now they want to expose them to unnecessary radiation just in the name of research. And I was wondering what your opinions were on that.
Well, it's an interesting question.
Well, I would just, Janine, I'm glad you raised this issue, because that's why they have informed consent for participation in research, as well as for major medical interventions. And you, as a parent and an informed advocate for your child, get to make a decision. And the researchers are required to lay out for you all of what's involved in the research and what the risk is. And if you have any questions, you certainly should continue to ask those questions and get satisfactory answers to your questions. So it is important that we have research, particularly about important diseases of childhood where potentially new treatments could be developed. But it's also very important that everybody look seriously for themselves about whether they really want to participate in that.
Gil, you want to add to that?
No, I think that's very well said.
But I wonder, just going back to the conversation we've been having, when it does involve a child and a parent sense of responsibility for that child. And Gil, I'll put this first to you, which is, you know, if your child is sick, the impulse is to want everything for that child.
Of course it is, that's a totally understandable emotion. But then you have to ask yourself the question, is everything actually in your child's interest?
Right.
And that's the kind of question we need to ask more in medicine. You know, is it really in the patient's interest, or are we doing it because it's kind of an easy knee-jerk response, or is it to meet some interest of the facility that we're working at? we really need to be focused on what matters to patients, exposing them to the right amount of medical care, recognizing that the best medical care is not the most.
And Gil and Marty, let me put in 2 cents worth here of advocacy for the reason why doctors train for 12 to 15 years is because doctors are supposed to have skills to do evaluations by listening to your heart and your lungs, examining the patient, doing a neurological exam, looking at the skin, and taking a history. And a vast majority of answers to your questions comes from that rather than from all these technological tests.
Well, and just flipping our show on its head, and Gil, I'll give you the last word here. We're talking about overdiagnosis, but it seems we also have a country where many people don't have health insurance at all. They can't get to a doctor, that we also have a problem of underdiagnosis.
Well, we certainly have a very variable health care system. In fact, some people would say we don't really have a system. Of course, this is what a lot of people are working on, trying to make the system more coherent and available and sensible for the nation as a whole.
Well, on that note, Dr. Gilbert Welch, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Professor of Medicine at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice wrote a book called Overdiagnosed, Making People Sick in Pursuit of Health. And Dr. Christine Castle, thank you for joining us as well.
You're welcome, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. She's the president and CEO of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation. And the initiative is called Choosing Wisely. That's a campaign with Consumer Reports. And you can go to their website, choosingwisely.org. You can also go to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for those phone calls, and thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.